There you go.
All right, welcome to Stories, Inspirations, and Moving Forward. I have the same guest, Andre, is with us. We had him last week to talk about his book series, and today I want to talk about his writing skills and methods that he uses. So welcome.
Hi.
So you have been writing for a couple of years. How long have you been writing for?
I'd say 9 years.
9 years. So you've really developed your process.
Oh, for sure.
So we spoke a little bit about your how you develop a character. You say, this is my character's name, and this is their problem, and their problem, their solution, and you kind of build out.
Well, if you've seen the video I made on my YouTube channel, Characters, which is about 24 minutes long, I really go in depth into basically turning what I call the cookie cutter character into a human being. So what's important about any character, even if it's an animal, is to treat them with human qualities, to understand that even if you're writing a children's book, you have to give them this sort of fleshy life, meaning you're not just giving your reader information, you're humanizing the character, you're making them seem real. So the way you do that is you start asking basically a million questions as if you're about to marry this person, this character. You're really getting to know their likes and dislikes, how they act, how they react, what they've been through, whether it's good or bad, if they've had a simple life, a complicated life, good or bad, do they use substances to get through their pain, or use substance for pleasure? It's a matter of how complex do you want to be, and what kind of person is this character? So that's why characters can be really difficult for a beginner, because you might not understand or didn't invest any time into the psychology of how a human being behaves, right? You can't just be like, oh, I like this character from this show, I'll try to do the same thing in my book. It's like, well, then you're not really creating anything. You're just mimicking someone, another creator. So that's why it's important to ask yourself, who is this character? What kind of journey are they going to have? And you can't determine the journey they're going to have without understanding who that character is beforehand. You know, I mean, that's why good character takes time to really master, because there's a difference between making something interesting and making something memorable.
Okay. And do you feel that you are almost getting to know them as if they are already a character, and you as the author have the chance to get to know them and find out about them?
Yeah, actually, I have this educational book beside me here. You can see it, but I don't think your listeners can. Bird by Bird by Anne Lemmet.
Okay.
Okay, that's a really good book to have for understanding the basics of writing. So I'll read the first half page for you so you understand character.
Okay.
So if you want to take notes, go ahead.
Yes, knowledge I am.
Knowledge of your characters also emerges the way a Polaroid develops. It takes time for you to know them. One image that helps me begin to know the people in my fiction is something a friend once told me. She said that every single one of us at birth is given an emotional acre, all our own. You get your awful Uncle Phil gets one. I get one. Trisha Nixa gets one. Everyone gets one. And as long as you don't hurt anyone, you really get to do with your acre as you please. You can plant fruit trees or flowers or alphabetize rows of vegetables or nothing at all. If you want your acre to look like a giant garage sale or an auto wrecking yard, that's what you get to do with it. There's a fence around your acre, though, with a gate, and if people keep coming onto your land and slamming it or trying to get you to do what they think is right, you get to ask them to leave. And they have to go because this is your acre. And then there was another page which adds on to it, basically saying you're asking them questions. You're asking the character questions, not yourself, the character. You're asking them, how do they behave? How do they react? Do they have a certain preference for voting for a certain candidate? Are they going to quit smoking? These kind of things. So it's really important to basically go in depth in your own examination of this character, even if you're doing nonfiction. Let's say you're talking about a hockey player. Mm-hmm. They're not just a hockey player. They're a person. They're a human being. So you dive into basically their motivation for being famous as this hockey player. Like what led to that point in their life, that career, right? They're not just slapping a puck around. There's a reason why they make so much money.
And what brought them to that point? This is absolutely fascinating because my first book, Making of Maya, is telling the story of little ones that I worked with, but I worked with them for such small pieces of time because they're in your class for maybe 6 months and then they're in the next class. And my editor said, well, what happened to them? And it would be so cool to create a story of who mm-hmm. they became. And of course, I didn't know, so I only wrote that snapshot of time. But he mm-hmm. would have been so much more satisfied if it followed your...
Let's say someone, I mean, I'm sure it's out there. Someone wrote a biographical novel of Adolf Hitler.
Okay.
Everyone sees him as this evil dictator that did a bunch of horrific things. But that's who we know him as an adult in a position of power, as opposed to his backstory. It doesn't mean that it's going to justify his actions. It's just going to give an insight to how they got to that point in their life and what are the meat and bones behind his drive for his ideology in terms of power. Because it's not like he was born evil. He went through several things and had a certain childhood and was either given or taken something away from him, and that maybe created this, you know, persona, this way of thinking. And that's why it's so hard to really make something accurate whoever you're talking about, if it's nonfiction, that person is dead. If they're dead, the only information you can get about their life is the people that are associated with him. And I don't know if you've heard this quote from Jim Carrey, but he once said, we all play different characters of ourselves.
And that's really cool.
One of the things that he said that really stuck with me is that the names we were given at birth is just an idea our parents had for us. It doesn't mean that that's who we are. It's just an idea of a version of who we are. So, you know, when you go to parties and whatnot, you're putting on a bit of a show without really losing yourself, but you know that, well, this person has this sort of connection to me in my life, so right. I have to put on this face for them, and in order to protect myself or to make them happy. So that's why characters are so complicated.
That's really fascinating and so true. And that's something that fascinates me about your work is you're able to create situations and walk the characters through them. And that's not something mm-hmm. that I have understood at all how to do. I enjoy that so much in a book, but it's like, how on earth do I do that?
Well, one of my weaknesses, admittedly, as a writer, is dialogue. Because dialogue in a book compared to a film script is very different, because for film script, you're just saying what's on screen. You're just saying, this is what's being said literally. Like there's no, it's just supposed to drive the story forward. Where in a book, you have to really be careful as to how to balance it with the action paragraphs and the narrative voice, because it has to have a certain flow. It can't just be some big block text and you're basically just doing an info dump. I mean, basically you're telling the reader, oh, you want information here? All of these characters do all the talking for me. That's not how dialogue works in books. In dialogue, it's very calculated. It's about how it moves the story forward and how it really gives a shining light to the character and how they act and how they speak, their own vocabulary basically. And that can be tricky for an editor, because if they're not used to editing, say, high fantasy, and okay, you're putting in your own like fantasy language, they might not know how to edit that. So you have to really know, what you're doing. Like Lord of the Rings. When he created his own language.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's why you have to be careful with dialogue, because you have to make sure that the editor doesn't have to do any work for that part. So you have to really understand grammar, really.
Yes.
As well as the editor.
That's so fascinating. It's crazy. And that's one of the things that was unique to Jane Eyre's. That time period that was so unique to her writing was the dialogue, that the book was primarily made up of dialogue.
Yeah.
And as a general consumer of entertainment, that doesn't seem like such a big deal, but it's, you know, Netflix and movies that we see. So dialogue doesn't seem like such a big deal, but in written form, it is.
Yeah, like when you watch a TV show, you're so entrenched in the story that you don't notice that each character has their own way of speaking. If they all had the same personality, same way of speaking, you wouldn't care. That's how shows get canceled, because it becomes forgettable.
Yes, so, very much so.
So when I was in university, that's what I was really working on. Where when I was getting my my little short stories workshopped, my classmates would say that some of the characters seemed very beige, meaning they all kind of talk the same way, and it has this way of creating difficulty for the intrigue for the reader to really dive into, because they're like, why should I pay attention to how these people are talking if it's hard to tell the difference between how they act and react from one another? Then it just becomes like a white canvas where it's like one person playing the same character with different names.
Right.
So that's why. That's why this whole series, Boone and Jacques, that I wrote, was such a test for me to really improve on these skills and really show that I'm taking this as a learning experience, as opposed to saying, this is my masterpiece. That's never how I'm going to see any book, because then I may as well be saying, I'm done learning. But that's not how I am.
Yeah, exactly. That's really cool to say, this is my step. This is the next step and the following to always be making it better. Do you feel that you're always going to be working inside of one book set, or will you be starting other stories in other worlds?
Yeah, of course. I mean, once book five is done for Boone and Jacques, I'll be doing individual stories. I can tell you three of them now. The first one is called Red Widow Waltz, which is about this widower, Harlow, who enters a program for widowers that are having trouble moving on. And when she goes into this program, essentially what this, it's like a VR, a virtual reality program that has taken each widower's I guess psychological information and creates these scenes where they are either thrown into chaos or into peace to really kind of jog their memory and their emotional scrambled mess and help them through this chaotic mess. So that's the idea. I might change it. That's what I always tell myself. You know, it's an idea. If you want to change it, change it. But that's the core of the story. The next one, Myra, which is my favorite one I want to work on. It's what I call the Southern Frank Sinatra story.
Okay.
So essentially, there's this Southern woman, Myra, who goes on sort of a, I don't want to say retirement, more like the peak of her career. Mm-hmm. And when she's going through this missing persons case, she starts going through all these phases of her journey to finding this person that kind of forces her to see things differently in terms of love.
Okay. And
yeah, I think I told you about that last time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about that.
Yeah.
Since the interview. There's so much.
Yeah. The other one I can tell you about is an animal war book.
Okay.
Yeah, very different. I've always wanted to do one. I just never had the skill set. It's very hard to do that kind of fantasy because there's no human beings or very little.
Yes.
You really have to understand character, because if you can master character and do that with animals, you can do anything.
Yes, you can. And really develop who each creature is and their dwelling places and how they relate to the world. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
What else do you want to know?
Those were primarily my questions. The program that I have written with is for largely nonfiction memoirs of various kinds, but there's a student in there that is writing a fantasy type of book that he wants to eventually be made into a motion picture. So okay. It's been interesting to have him in the group as well, because it's completely different.
Well, then I can tell you about world building. That's important for fantasy and even for nonfiction.
Okay.
So the thing about world building is that you have to treat the world that you create as a fifth character.
Okay.
So fifth character doesn't literally mean fifth character. Fifth character is essentially a term that means it is not just background. It is a living, breathing thing that complements your character's journey and how it changes with them.
Wow.
So, but one important thing to note, though, and this kind of gets away from world building, but it does tie it back in a little bit. Characters do not have to change by the end of the story. They don't have to be some transformative person. They can remain the same person throughout the journey, but come to your realization of, I am who I am because of yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that that they're going to somehow become a different person, good or bad or worse, or think that the reasons why they are the way they are is negative. They just are self-aware. So let's say you have a drunk that's a main character.
Okay.
And they remain a drunk throughout the whole story. If they find out that their substance use is due to childhood trauma or romance trauma or something from their past, if they become aware of that and they don't, you're having a hard time finding a way to get them to change, then it's a matter of what is around them. What does their environment do to help or not help? So you have to manipulate that into something that gets them out of that static state and get them to go somewhere. Take the movie, The Game, with Michael Douglas, for example. He goes through this psychological game that his brother did for his birthday, and the cinematography changes with his emotional changes. And he does change by the end of it, but what that really teaches you, not just as a viewer, but as someone who wants to write a story, is that as human beings, we go through a lot. And it doesn't mean that we are going to change because of all that chaos. It just means that if we were in a bubble that we created ourselves, we're going to burst out of it. But once that bubble bursts and we see who we are inside and out, it doesn't mean that we're going to be willing to change. So I actually have some notes here from when I made a video about world building, which I really do recommend that you watch, because I really go in depth for like almost a half hour. And I don't want to take a So one of them, number five, actually the last one, connection.
Okay.
So that's actually the most important one, and I'll focus on that for this interview here. But I really do recommend you and your listeners to watch that, because it's so complicated, even more complicated than character. So connection is, how does the world you create connect with your character? So even if you write nonfiction, ask yourself, okay, this person lived in this town and then moved to a city and did this in this town, or lived this life in this town and lived a different life in the city. So the question is, why did they leave the town? What is it about that part of that world you created that they start from that made them say, you know what, I can't live my life here anymore. I need to go somewhere else. So that's more literal, obviously, for nonfiction, because you're just essentially telling a story with real information, whereas fiction is creating a world completely from the ground up. So what that means is the world that you create fictionally is not something that is a copy of what you know in real life. It's based off of the environments that you know in real life, and then you create your own environment for that character that works for the story, not that works for reality. So take the story It by Stephen King. That starts, or is centralized, in Derry, a small town in Maine. So when you as a reader start reading this book, you're first introduced to just a home, to Billy, the older brother. He's sick in bed all day, and he makes this little paper boat for his brother, George. And that's, we start in a very intimate place of this world. We don't really get to see much of Derry and the first page. And that's how you really create a world, where you start small and then expand from that point. So you ask yourself, well, what kind of neighborhood are they in? Is there a big population, small population? What kind of people are in this world? And when your main characters are walking from environment to environment, what kind of background noise is there? So one of the other components is society. That's one of the parts of world building, society. And that's where you decide, well, should my character be in a city environment, or should they be in an urban environment, out in the woods, out in the desert? I don't know. It depends on what you want. So you really have to understand your own reality and your own travel experiences and whatnot, and see how you can implement that into your world building.
That's really cool that how you say you have to understand your own world, create a world, and to be aware of the environment you're putting them in and how they react to that environment.
Yeah, for example, one of the, I'll give you a little teaser of the video. One of the environments I haven't explored yet that I'm going to is a city environment. So let's say you have a business type, you know, someone who's always wearing suits and drinking expensive coffee and is always carrying a suitcase. Well, the question is, what kind of person are they and who is around them?
Okay.
So let's say that they're walking down a busy city street, like New York kind of thing, where there's a bunch of different, you know, cultures and, you know, levels of income, like types of classes. And let's say a homeless man bumps into him and he spills his coffee. Is he going to act angrily? Is he just going to slough it off and keep walking? We don't know how he's going to act. And that's just one person amongst millions of people around this person as they're walking in the busy street. So it's a matter of how do you want your character to react? And what mm-hmm. is the first taste that you're giving your reader to this character? Like, how are you introducing them? Like, what side of this person are you telling the reader in the first few pages?
That always fascinates me and has since I learned how to read, is how they introduce the first person, especially if it's from the view, primarily through the lens of the main character. Mm-hmm. How does the character introduce themselves to the reader? Has always fascinated me. There's so many different ways of doing that.
Yeah, another example, for polar opposite here for your listeners. Let's say you have a lone character, a lone wolf that lives in a cabin. You can't really do anything interesting or artificially speaking, because it's in this very natural environment far away from society. How do you colorize that? So the way to colorize that is to actually bring people to that isolated area. Okay. So let's say that this person is eyeing an animal from a distance, mm-hmm. like from the back of their cabin, or maybe they're even just sitting in their cabin. You can have visitors or hikers going into this forest and they find this cabin by accident.
Okay.
Right. And then it's like, well, is he going to tell him to get off the porch kind of thing? Like very, you know, grumbly old man kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Or is he by himself and he's the one hunting an animal outside of his cabin, and he becomes the hunted, meaning there is an animal behind him that wants to chase him. Mm-hmm. So you flip it. He's the hunter, then he becomes the hunted.
Wow. That's really interesting how smoothly you can do that. Think of mm-hmm. different perspectives and different story types.
Yeah, because the thing about character arcs is that at the beginning, even if it doesn't seem like it, they're in control of their life. Because you as the writer, you haven't changed anything yet. You just started writing the story. So they're at a fixed point, not just in their life, but who they are as a person. So that means that they aren't going to change unless you give them motive, give them what I call forced change, even though it's not forced, it's new, a new change.
By changing their environment?
Not just their environment, but also the pattern of their life. Because even if you change the environment, they can still have the same pattern.
Okay.
That's really what you're trying to achieve here, is change the pattern of their routine. Maybe they have a certain routine, a certain way of living, acting and reacting, and you're testing whether or not they're capable of changing their way of being. Or if you even want them to.
That's so cool. Have you ever read Inkheart, Inkspell, those books?
Sorry?
Have you ever read the Inkheart books?
No.
I'll have to share those with you. I think they would go in the fantasy section for young adults probably, but they are, it's a created world. That it's really hard to summarize, but in order to change parts of the story, they need to find the author of the book, and he has to rewrite it, and the main character has to read it. When the main character reads something, a part of the story that he's reading comes into real life, and a part of real life goes into the story. And when he originally read the book Inkheart, his wife went into the story and a creature came out. So the whole point of the first book is to find her within the book. So they have to get into the world and then to find the author to get everybody out. So it's a very gripping book for a household of kids who want to read the book. So my mom would give us turns to read the book. We grew up without TV, so it was a big deal for us.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So it would be interesting to read that again as an adult. The daycare baby has woken up, so I think we might have to wrap up this interview. But
okay.
Thanks for taking time again.
Of course. It was fun.
Yeah. Have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye.